Last week we talked about how love is patient and love is kind. And the sun coming off those cars out there is blinding. So if I look at you and it looks like I'm squinting, go back to Transfiguration Sunday, I'll put my sunglasses back on. How love is patient and love is kind. And this week we have Paul switching from what love is to what love isn't. So along with telling us what love is, Paul offers us a list of things that love is not. As they looked at this list of things that love isn't in various English translations, the words in this list of nots, they consist of the following. Love is not jealous. It's not envious. It's not arrogant. It's not rude. It's not boastful. Love isn't demanding. Love isn't selfish or self-serving. Love isn't irritable or short-tempered or resentful. And we're going to save irritable, short-tempered, and resentful for next week. It's too much for us to handle in 1 week. But this week, we're going to talk about the rest of the list. One of the things that I observed about myself is that when I am more in touch with Christ in my life, I am less of the things on this list. But the thing that is most apparent when I am not walking as closely with God is that I am selfish. I tend to think of myself first more often when I am not close with Christ. I begin to think in terms of mine. Who remembers the seagulls from Finding Nemo? Mine, 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 right? I cannot. I'm going to have to stay right here today because I can't. I get blinded every time I move. One of the first indicators that things are out of whack for me is when I begin to think about my time, about my talent, about my money and my availability. When I start to think in terms of how inconvenient things are for me. When we get to get possessive with the stuff that God has given me, I know that my personal compass is off true north a little bit. Things aren't square with me when I start thinking of me, and it's a warning sign. All the things that we are considering this morning are rooted in selfishness when you think about them. Think of the list again. Jealousy, envy, arrogance, rudeness, boastfulness, being demanding. They're all rooted in self first, in being selfish about things. Jealousy comes from comparing what I have to what someone else has, or from being too possessive of what I have. Jealousy doesn't trust the source of that thing that we need or the gifts that we've been given. If I'm jealous of what someone else has, odds are I am more focused on their stuff than I am the gifts that God's given me. Only when my eyes are looking at someone else's things can I be jealous. When you're feeling jealous about things, the thing to do is to look back at your own life and say, hey, guess what? Man, I am so blessed. My life is so full of blessing. Why would I be jealous of someone else? And the second part of that is that jealousy doesn't trust the source of that thing that we need or the gifts in our life. When I'm looking at someone else's life in a way that makes me jealous, it's probably because I don't trust God enough to bless me as well. I had a conversation with a parent from who has children from two marriages. And she admitted that she was jealous when her daughter spent time with her father's family. That she didn't like that about herself, but that it was something real in her, that she felt this sense of jealousy. And she said, when you said that to me this morning, I realized that what's really bothering me is that I don't believe that she'll spend as much time with me. I don't think that she'll spend as much time with me and my family. And it sets me off. And I said, what if you thought about the time that your daughter had with her father and his family as a blessing to her? What if you were just glad she got to spend time with those people? Your time will come. And odds are the time that you have together will be better because you're not thinking about what you didn't get. But jealousy doesn't trust. When you think about that between the love of two people, like in a marriage relationship or in another close relationship, in a partnership with someone, I'm not jealous because I trust my wife. I know that when we're not spending time together, that she's not spending it with someone else. I know that already. She doesn't spend the things in our married life that we share as a couple on other people. It'll come. When time is abundant, we'll get time together. Right? Raising children, you know that when you have kids, couples, the time that you have with one another kind of goes away for a chapter. Right? Patience allows it to come back. Right, and we're now in a season of life when one of the lovers isn't working, we get to be together, and mostly without the kids, and it's good, it's all right. But I'm not jealous because I trust her. Arrogance comes when we misassign the source of the things in our lives. When all I have comes from me, from my hard work, and from my sense of achievement, I can brag or boast about what I've done, because I've done it. However, when we recognize that all we have comes from God, there is no room for arrogance in our lives, only for gratitude and humility. I've accomplished a few things in my life, none of them without God's help. There's nothing that I've accomplished in my life that God hasn't first given me the gifts to accomplish. And the only reason God would gift any of us to do anything is to help other people. So as soon as I start thinking about all the things that I've accomplished in my life, and I'll back up and say that in our culture, especially, I think, we believe in a pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of, I get it, if I work for it, I earned it kind of mentality. That's the culture that we're raised in. And to some degree, there's nothing wrong with working hard for what we accomplish, but I like to think of it in terms of working really hard to apply the gifts that God's given me for the benefit of the culture I live in, for the benefit of the community I live in, or for the benefit of others. You see, God doesn't give gifts so that we can boast and be proud and beat our chests. God gifts us so that we can work together in community to make the place that we live more like the kingdom of God. That's really all the only reason. So when you think you've accomplished something, pause. Push the pause button and thank God for the gifts God gave you to get there. Rudeness. Rudeness is rooted in disregard for others. That's all there is to it. When we're rude to other people, it's because we're thinking more of ourselves than we are of them. That's the simple truth of it. When my feelings and expressions of myself are more important to me than the feelings of others, I tend to act rudely. Let's take a meeting setting. I'm sitting around the table at a meeting, and it's big enough that I can lean over to the person next to me and say something kind of under my breath, or just have a private conversation. And when I'm in a room with a lot of people, that's rude. If I got something to say, I should just say it to everyone in the room, or it's not worth saying. And it's something I'd rather not say in front of all those people. Why would I take the time to say it to the person next to me? Because I'm thinking about either I'm making a joke or I'm doing something that wouldn't be well received in the room, and it's rude. But the opposite is true here as well. When I assume that others are being rude because they are not meeting my expectations without seeking to understand who they are, rudeness can be turned around quickly. When someone enters a space where they're unfamiliar, let's say church, right? People come to church early in their church life, or they're just entering church, and they don't really know the protocol. They don't really know what's going on. And they do something that I would never expect to happen in church, because I've been here for most of my life. And I think, ugh, how rude. Immediately, who's rude? Me. Because why? I didn't take time to understand their position. I didn't take time to be patient and kind like we talked last week. Right? I decided to make a trade for patience and kindness for rudeness. Right? And a little arrogance, if you don't mind me adding that in there. And love, there's no room in love for those things. I think the point of this list is that they are all rooted in selfishness. Love requires us to think outside ourselves first and always. Love requires us to recognize that what we have comes from God and is meant for God's use in God's kingdom. When this is our understanding of the talents that we have and the gifts in our lives, there is no room for boasting or pride or arrogance. Because all we have comes from God. When we are thinking of others first, it is all but impossible for us to be rude or demanding. And it is impossible to be selfless and selfish at the same time. Think about that. They are mutually exclusive. You cannot be selfless and selfish in the same moment. Jesus was the most selfless human being that ever walked this planet. If we are following Jesus, we are being asked to emulate him in every way, especially in selflessness. Selflessness asks us to let go of things like our comfort for the comfort of others. Love, in fact, sometimes asks us to be uncomfortable and inconvenienced for the sake of others. How many parents were ever uncomfortable or inconvenient for the sake of your kids? Yeah. How many of you did those things to support them that you would rather not do? I'm not going to name any of them because there are young people in the room. Right? You just went anyway. You didn't go because you liked it. You go because you love the people who are doing whatever it is you're going to watch. Inconvenience and uncomfortable. Now let's think about that in terms of the upcoming possibility of merger. We're asking three congregations to come together in one place. It's not going to be comfortable. Crickets. Right? It's. We should expect to have some discomfort in the process. I mean, if your idea of comfort on Sunday morning is rolling into church about 11 to have just the kind of worship service you want to have with just the kind of people that you want to be with, and it's just going to be just like that, you're going to be uncomfortable. There are three contributing voices to what happens on Sunday morning on July 1st. Three congregations who have some inkling of what they're doing, that's right, and that's the way it should be done. And we're going to come together to form one congregation. We're not all going to be comfortable all the time. In fact, if some of us aren't if all of us aren't uncomfortable a little bit, we've probably missed the mark. The other thing to consider is that there's one other voice. There's a fourth voice in the process. When we redesign Sunday morning, When we move things around to make room, there's a fourth voice in the process, and that's the voice of the people that aren't here yet. Right? That's the first most important voice for which we would make changes. Because when we are in Christ already, I'm assuming that most of you have relationships with Jesus Christ. You're here. The first call for us is to be in service to others immediately. We should expect to be uncomfortable. I think sometimes in our arrogance, we as Christians forget who Jesus is and what Jesus came to do. Jesus was Jewish. We get this Christian arrogance that says, oh, we're Christians. I'm a good Christian, right? What's that mean? Jesus was Jewish. He was born and raised in a Jewish household. He taught in the temple or synagogue, and he was, by definition and training, a rabbi. What Jesus came to do was to reform or to change the way people thought about being Jewish. It wasn't as if Jesus came to do an entirely new thing. He came to do an old thing differently. He was yet another example of God reaching out to God's people saying, hello, you've missed the mark. Come along. Watch this guy. As Christians, we have no claim of being better than anyone else. In fact, being Christian means recognizing that we aren't better than anyone else and that we need God in our lives. Let me listen to this parable that Jesus taught in the Gospel of Luke. Going to Luke chapter 18, verse 9. I'm going to read the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. Then Jesus told a story to some who had great confidence in their own righteousness and scorned everyone else. Two men, Jesus, this is red letters, Jesus says, two men went into the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee, and the other was a despised tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed this prayer: I thank you, God, that I am not a sinner like everyone else. For I don't cheat, I don't sin, and I don't commit adultery. I'm certainly not like that tax collector over there. I fast twice a week, and I give you a tenth of my income. Aren't I great? Editorial, I added. But the tax collector stood at a distance and dared not even lift his eyes to heaven as he prayed. Instead, he beat his chest in sorrow, saying, oh God, be merciful to me, for I am a sinner. I tell you, this sinner, not the Pharisee, returned home justified before God. For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Tax collectors were among the worst kind of people in the eyes of the Jews. We talked about them some last week. They were liars and cheaters and thieves and traitors. They extorted money from their own families even for their own benefit. Jesus chooses the tax collector on purpose when he tells this story because if a Jewish leader, a keeper of the law, could justify himself against anyone, it was a tax collector. Jesus, in essence, is saying that none of us is better than any of the rest of us. And the sooner we recognize that, the better chance we have of loving others at all. Jesus is poking at the idea that any righteousness that we have is not our own, but comes from God. We are not righteous on our own, but made righteous and or redeemed through Christ. We cannot receive the righteousness of God while we are clinging to self-righteousness and arrogance. It is impossible for us to be made righteous if we already think we're right. If I already think like the Pharisee in that prayer sequence that Jesus, if I already think, thank God I'm not as bad as anybody else, thank God I don't do that, if I'm already there, then what room is there for me to receive the righteousness of Christ? I don't think I need it. I'm here to tell you, I need it. Right? I need to humble myself before the Lord. And I'm guessing you do too. Arrogance and humility are mutually exclusive. They cannot exist together. Jesus was all loving and all humble. Therefore, we cannot begin to be loving if we are any of the things Paul has on this list of things love isn't. There is no room for arrogance or boasting or rudeness in love. Later in this chapter, we'll encounter the idea that love endures all things, which means that in loving others, we have to be willing to endure even the things on the list that we are asked not to be in order that we can show others the love that Jesus has shown us. Patience and kindness. People are going to be rude. When we consider the three churches coming together, think about the sacrifices being made at Birchwood and Trinity. They're both letting go of their facilities places they've gone to church for 30, 40, 50 years for the benefit of others. They will be grieving. They will be hurting. They're bound to say and do things that we don't expect. The last thing they need to be met with is us being rude on our own behalf. Us clinging to the way things were, or clinging to the way things we think things should be, because this is Chapel Hill. That's the last attitude that we need to come to that table with. We've all got to be willing to lay it all down, that God could use everything that God's already given us to do something different in the time ahead. That's exciting. Really exciting. We have not yet articulated a vision for this team, but one thing we're considering is reallocating God's resources to better serve our community. That's one of the ideas we have for a vision. How exciting is that? To do things differently on purpose, not because we have to, but because we can. To bring the assets that God has put in place in three churches in town into one place and say, guess what? We can do ministry in a whole bunch of different ways. We will likely loosen up somewhere north of $250,000 to do ministry in this community in this process. So exciting. God can't use it if we're hanging on to it. Got to be willing to let it go. There is no room in this process coming for rudeness or arrogance or boastfulness. We've got to be loving and caring and kind. The way Jesus has been and continues to be loving and caring and sacrificing in our own lives. We're going to celebrate Holy Communion together, and Holy Communion is all about remembering the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. Remembering what God has done for us. Repositioning our compass so that we remember what we're here to do, and that is to be in service to others.